Deep Sky Eye Observatory with Tim Doucette on episode 407 of the Actual Astronomy Podcast. I'm Chris, and joining me is Shane. We are amateur astronomers who love looking up at the night sky, and this podcast is for everybody who likes going out under the stars. So we have Tim Doucette joining us this morning, and what I'll do first is just read a brief introduction, and then we'll hop into things. Tim believes that through education and awareness of the universe, the world can become a better place. Through his passion for astronomy and his photography, Tim shows us the beauty of the heavens. He was born blind with congenital cataracts. Later, these cataracts were surgically removed along with the lenses of his eyes. Tim's unique eye condition leaves him legally blind, but able to perceive colors in the universe through a telescope that very few others can see. Shortly after joining the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada, Tim discovered his unique eye condition. He set up an observatory in Moncton, New Brunswick, where he found a love for sharing the night sky with others. He and his family currently reside in his hometown of Quinnan, Nova Scotia, and own and operate a successful astrotourism business. Working with municipality and Starlight Foundation backed by UNESCO and the IAU, the area has received the first Starlight Tourist designation and reserve designation in North America. Welcome to the show, Tim. Great to have you.
Oh, thanks, Chris. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's really nice to catch up a bit. We don't really know each other super well, but we ran into each other a few times way back in the day at the Nova Scotia Star Parties, and I think even maybe at the New Brunswick Star Party at one point.
I think so, yeah. That's, I think, where I remember seeing and meeting you there.
Yeah, so it's always neat to kind of catch back up with people. But since that time, I've been kind of following along a bit just because of some other committees that I've been on that you've had some contacts with when you were setting up your observatory. And your observatory is called the Deep Sky Eye. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
And people who want to check that out, they can go to www.deepskyeye.com. And Tim, maybe you can just start by telling us a little bit about, how you get into astronomy. And if you can share with us and with the listeners, how you see the universe differently.
Yeah, so I was always interested in space, as most people who are, you know, who enjoy the hobby. And for me, it was slightly different. I sort of had a start in I had two starts. So I was born blind for the first year and a half of my life. So I was interested in space, but I only have 10% of my eyesight. And it turned out that once the cataracts were removed as a baby, that's what I was left with. At the age of 12, I was always fascinated with the moon, because I think that's because one of the only things that I could see outside of my bedroom window at night as a, you know, a young child, I was always fascinated with the light in the sky. And I think that's where my sort of interest started. But by the age of 12, I got my first little Pasco telescope from Sears, as most people have probably have seen the way back in the day. And, you know, really for me, the only thing I could really see was the moon and, you know, other, bright stars in the night sky. So I was kind of discouraged myself, and I was discouraged by other people that maybe astronomy might not be the best hobby, and not really in those exact words, but that's kind of where I left it. So I sold the telescope. And then at the age of 16, I got, my eyesight got worse. I lost about another 5% of my eyesight. So I was left with 5. I went back for surgery again because the cataracts had returned, and they actually had to do aggressive surgery that time, take the lenses out completely. And it actually gave me, you know, better vision because I could see better. But I noticed the doctor had told me, said, you're going to have to wear sunglasses like all the time now. When it's, you know, even cloudy, you'll find that it's going to be very bright. Two things happened during that surgery. They removed the lenses of the eyes, and they also widened my pupils. The normal pupil size for a person is like 8 millimeters. Mine is like 13.
During
darkness.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's crazy, actually. It's basically kind of like having your eyes dilated all the time. And they don't change. So mine don't shrink very much at all. So lighting is a problem. Well, you know, I have a big screen monitor, and I've got the brightness turned down, and I've got one of those little lamp bulbs that you can control the brightness and all that fun stuff to try to keep the light down. But once that happened, I didn't really think of it anymore. I got into computers at the time. I really was into computer programming, which I still am. That's my sort of day job. I'm a software engineer and still work for a company remotely for the last, you know, 9 years. So, then later on, it was interesting because about 15 years later, my wife, she really wanted me to, have a hobby. Our son was about 4 years old, and she's like, you know, you really need to get a hobby, because my only real hobby was video games. She's like, you're too much in the computer. So anyhow, she said, I heard there's an astronomical event coming in 2003. It was the closest approach to Mars that Mars was going to be to Earth, like since for 30,000 years or something. So she bought me a telescope from Costco in the summertime, kind of as an early Christmas present. And I was out stargazing, and I was looking at the telescope actually was broken. It was one of the Celestron 4.5-inch reflectors, and the motors didn't work. And I think sometimes partially it was might have been my fault. I might have put the batteries in backwards, and Celestron telescopes were notorious for having power issues at the time. But the motor didn't work. But I actually was able to see Mars and seeing this just little, you know, red disc, and it was kind of got me really excited. I had a Sony Handycam at the time and recorded a video of it, and, you know, brought it in the house and looked at it, and I was freaking out because I could actually see the polarized cap a little bit. And I think that sort of piqued my interest, but I thought, you know, hey, this is fun and all, but I can't afford a big telescope, and this is probably all I can see is these bright objects, which is like, you know, Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars type of thing. So I didn't think of it too much, and my wife was pretty insistent. She's like, "Well, you know, maybe there's a club or something that can help you with your eyesight. Maybe there's special lenses and stuff." So, anyhow, I found the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada was having a public observing at the University of Moncton, and I think they have a 14 or 16 inch. I think it was a 14 inch telescope, Cassegrain. So I went stargazing with them. It was in the city, so there was really not, you know, we saw the planets, but I connected with Rask and made some friends, and they offered to take me out stargazing to show me their telescopes and, you know, see what I could really see. And it was funny because I remember that first night I went out with my friend Charles Doucette, Emma McPhee, and
Oh yeah,
from
I know
Moncton.
Emma. I know Emma quite well, actually. Yeah, she's the new observing chair. She just took the role on this year.
Yes, she did. And it was fun. So we went out, and Charles had a 8-inch Dobsonian, I believe, at the time. And he pointed at something. He said, "Have a look. Tell me what you can see." And I poked my eye in there and said, "Well, I see like a little donut and some little spots in the middle." And he's like, "Wait a minute." He said, "Don't think you're supposed to be able to see those things in the middle and the stars in the middle with this telescope, unless, well, they're there." And I said, "It looks like a pool of water in the middle." And we started talking, and we were looking at the Ring Nebula. And anyways, we as the night was going on, I was looking through this telescope, looking at different objects and describing things that, you know, he's like, "Wow," he said, "you really have good night vision." I was like, "I guess I do. I didn't really think of it." But looking at like the Ring Nebula was interesting because, you know, it's a star that's been exploded, if you will, and has died, and the stars in the center are emitting high energy, you know, ultraviolet light, which are lighting up the gases. And I didn't think of it, but once I went and spoke with I did my research at first, talked to my doctor, and sort of asked them, "What did you guys do to my eyes? Like, why am I seeing this stuff?" And people are saying that they're not seeing it. And the doctor first said, "Well, it's very possible that you're seeing part in ultraviolet, So I talked to Dr. Ralph Chu from RAS. I made a connection with him in Halifax, and he kind of explained it to me. He said, you know, the lens of your eye is a filter for ultraviolet light that protects your retina from damage from the sun. And he said, it's absolutely, totally possible that you are picking up a higher wavelength of light than the person with lenses. And that's, you know, that made a lot of sense to me, because I remember when I was 19, I was 19, 20, I went with my friends to a dance club for the first time, and they had black lights. And the first time they turned the black lights on, I had an instant headache, and I couldn't understand what people were seeing, you know, with black lights shining on white clothes and stuff. And I couldn't tell, because to me, everything was totally violet. Everything was just like a bright violet light. So, like a bug light will, you know, on the side of a building that has the bug zappers with the old UV light, to me, that acts like a light. It just shines over everything. I can see it all over the place.
Wow.
So anyways, from that point on, I kind of fell in love with sharing the night sky and learning about the night sky and sharing it with people. It's one of those things, I think, that for my whole life, I've always depended on people to assist me, you know, with visual things, like maybe reading a menu or seeing, you know, which bus is coming down the road. But now it was kind of like, hey, I actually have something that I can share with people to kind of give back and, you know, get people excited about the night sky. So that's kind of where my passion really started to grow.
Wow.
And of course, I really love photography. So that was kind of another thing that I was always very much into since I was in high school. I was the first person in our high school to have a video camera. I had worked a whole summer just to buy a video camera and, you know, did a little bit of video stuff, but, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So Tim, I'm just wondering, when it comes to looking at the Ring Nebula or other nebula in the night sky or stars or all the different things, like for me, like the color, I used to see the color in things more. There's some colors I can see now that I couldn't see before. But for example, like if you look at the Orion Nebula, do you see color in that as well, or anything else, like as far as stars are concerned?
Absolutely. Like for me, colors are way more vivid than they used to be. And when I remember when I had, for example, my first eye done, I remember telling my dad, we used to, you know, be driving or whatever, and I'd be looking into the sky, like especially at sunset. Some weird stuff happens at sunset. And I said to my dad, I said, this is weird. I said, in my left eye, I can see different colors than my right eye. And I said, the sky looks like totally different. There's more pink and violet and everything. And anyways, he couldn't understand that. I didn't either at the time. This was, you know, back when I first had this first surgery. Mm-hmm. And then, so looking at the Orion Nebula, in fact, the best view of Orion Nebula I ever had was with my 9.25-inch telescope. I was in Moncton, believe it or not, in the city. And what really caught me is I was my little finder scope to find the, you know, on the telescope was not aligned at all. And I was trying to find the Orion Nebula with my telescope, and I just couldn't find it. I was like, what's going on? And I thought the focus was busted. You know, I was all like trying to figure it out. And it's like probably within the first year of having my telescope, so I'm getting really used to the Schmidt-Cassegrain stuff. Anyhow, and I just by chance took out the visual back and looked into the tube, and right there was the Orion Nebula focused directly on my retina, because my eyes are like a camera without a lens. And it kind of made me jump at first, because I'm like, whoa. And then I looked in, and that was the Orion Nebula. Zero power view, with no eyepiece in the way. Absolutely stunning. So very pink, and violet that, you know, extended quite a ways, you know, with the limits of the city light pollution. And when I moved to Quinnan here, you know, looking at objects in a dark sky makes such a difference. But yeah, like the Ring Nebula, I wouldn't see any real color to it unless I had a larger scope.
Mm-hmm.
Stars, definitely colors. Other nebula, the other one I see color in, I find, is the Lagoon Nebula.
Mm-hmm.
I can pick out color in that in the 16 inch pretty easily. It's very different. Some people that are looking through the telescope sometimes can't even see the thing. So.
Yeah. I'm curious, for stars, like when you look at Albireo, or are there other colorful stars, and what do you see for color in those?
Yeah, like Albireo does appear kind of a yellowish color to me,
mm-hmm.
and more of a pink kind of color to its companion. So it's I always ask people that question too, when people are looking through the telescope at the double stars,
mm-hmm.
Especially because age makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get the kids that are like, oh, it's blue and yellow, and other people are like, oh, it's blue and blue, or, you know, not blue and blue, but, you know, orange and blue. So
mm-hmm.
Tim, have you noticed like a difference when looking at galaxies? You know, probably not so much with color, but just the extent and dust lanes and things like that.
No, because I'm gathering, I can see more of the galaxy, not so much because of the ultraviolet sensitivity, mm-hmm. but more, I think, because of this pupil size that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like having a wider aperture telescope, right? So something that I'd be looking at and see dust lanes and such, some people can't even see it. They're like, we don't see any, like, it's just a little fuzzy dot or something. And I'm like, well, there's like a little spiral arm going up in this way. But yeah, no, I don't really notice a lot of difference with the galaxies.
I'm curious about the astronomy business that you run there. I'm kind of hoping maybe you can tell us and our listeners a little bit about the Deep Sky Eye Observatory and the whole experience there you've got set up for people.
Yeah, so when I moved down here, so our main reason for moving here was at first was family. You know, my son was just going into high school and really wanted to be out in the country, and my parents were getting older, so we decided to make the move. Deep Sky Eye Observatory was originally in Moncton, and we had sort of open house every month, and I had, you know, as a member of RASC, I was the national representative for the New Brunswick Center for a few years,
mm-hmm.
and we used to have open house kind of thing every month. And by the time we were finished when we moved, we had a list that we would never get to the end of. We had so many people that wanted to come, you know, even right in the city, you know, looking at the planets, the moon, you know, whatever it was. And we always had a fun time with it. We had groups and such. So,
that was just at your house, was it? Or
yeah, that was in the backyard in our house. Yeah, it's right there on Whitney Avenue. And
okay,
we were lucky because we were backed onto a smaller street. Mm-hmm. So I think we had like one of the nicest backyards there in you know, in town at the time, and we had the power company adjust their lights and stuff, and it was nice. And then when we moved here, we had you know, I told my wife, I said, you know, I have to rebuild my observatory here. I said, you know, here we are again in Bortle 2 skies, you know, Bortle 1 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, we're you know, I have to rebuild, and you know, I wonder if, you know, if there's a way to do, you know, a business, a little small business out of it, to see where it would go. And At the time, there was a local group here that was looking to have the area certified for its dark skies.
Yeah, it's like a hunting camp or something like that, if I remember. Maybe I'm misremembering, but
No, it's not a hunting camp. It's out in the woods, and you could probably definitely go hunting out there.
yeah.
But it was Trout Point Lodge.
Oh, that's yeah.
So it was kind of a nature retreat for people to go there. And so they were sort of kind of spearheading with a local group called La Société Touristique Bontemps. They kind of started this whole thing, and they had reached out to me because, and I think the only reason they reached out to me was when we were first moving here, I had applied there because they were looking for an astronomer to do guided tours and such. So I thought, that would be a lot of fun. I said, it's a little different than IT, but I said, it's only like 15 minutes from my place. I said, I'm sure I could figure out a way to get there. Anyways, they reached out to me after, and they kind of mentioned that they were looking to have the area certified for its dark skies and whatnot. So I was invited to speak with the auditors from the Canary Island, from the Starlight Foundation, who came for probably a month to sort of analyze the skies in the region and the not just the skies, but the people and the way of life and all that. So in the end, in 2014, we ended up becoming the area itself became the first Starlight tourist destination and reserve in North America. It turned out we were also only the fourth place in the world to have both a Starlight tourist destination and a reserve area. So as you probably know, UNESCO is has backed the Starlight Foundation. And our area here is we're part of the UNESCO biosphere. So there's a lot of UNESCO sites, heritage sites, and such. So it was a perfect fit. They kind of needed somebody to really take it on that was not really a business person, really didn't have to be, but was more of a passionate person to kind of to spearhead the whole thing. At the time, it was business owners that ran Trout Point that were running it. And then once they moved, I took over. And the idea is that for me, our business, I opened up this Deep Sky Observatory just to show that, the astrotourism is a viable business, and that it would bring people to our small little municipality of Argyle and Yarmouth.
Nice.
So the three municipalities that got involved in this, Yarmouth, Clare, and Argyle, are still involved. Since 2014, we just got recertified in 2020. I'm trying to think, 2022, I believe. Yeah, I think it was 2022, just a couple of years ago, we got recertified for another 4 years. They provide feedback on, astrotourism, education, light pollution, light pollution abatement. So they kind of give us, ideas as well. They provided a huge report on, providing, basically incorporating Starlight into all aspects of business, education, and how it, relates to our communities.
Nice.
Since we have mostly like we're basically Acadian and Mi'kmaq, it kind of fit really well, and we're just starting to work with the Mi'kmaq, which is fun because we're trying to with the whole push to kind of have that connection and the whole concept of understanding each culture and respecting each culture. So it kind of fits into it. So I created Deep Sky Observatory here. We opened in 2016. I guess I had the first year, probably about a couple of hundred guests. And it was kind of like, let's try this out, see if it works. And it doubled every year till we basically every clear night we were full. You know, at the time we were taking 15 people, and we've been sort of growing since then. Back in 2018, we opened up what's called Sky Bubble Tents, and it's essentially a 16-foot inflated, you know, positive pressure tent. So kind of like the kids' blow up toys there and you have outside. And it has a 16-foot clear vinyl opening at the top, so it's clear. There's no obstruction. There's no like little triangles or anything like that in the way. And it's interesting because the vinyl kind of acts like a lens. It bends the light a little bit. So you look at like a, let's say there's a tree there, and then you're looking up at the night sky from your comfortable bed. It kind of looks like you could touch it. Like it's pretty cool. We have the thing heated so people can stay overnight, and it's just an amazing experience. And even if it's like a rainy day or whatever, and maybe it's not clear out, it's still pretty awesome. We usually charge double when there's like a thunderstorm. No, I'm just kidding. Quite an experience though.
That sounds amazing, Tim. What kind of telescopes are available there for patrons that want to spend some time there?
Yeah, so we normally do an experience for that night that's like, we had to change it because of COVID, so things changed quite a bit. But I created the Nocturnal Sky Theater experience where we can have like 30 people now in our group outside. People are sitting in the chairs. We do a presentation on the big screen, a demonstration of the 14-inch McCassegrain telescope that's in the observatory dome. We don't use it for visual anymore because of COVID. It was just too tight to be up in the dome with so many people. But then we do like a tour of the night sky, and then we do some stargazing with the telescopes. So now we have quite a few telescopes now. We have two 16-inch Dobsonians. One is a the Skywatcher go-to telescope. And we have an astrophysics Starfire EDF refractor on a CGEM. Not CGEM, sorry. That one's the CGE Pro mount. Which is a beautiful little instrument for like the planets. It's quite impressive. We have another one that is sort of starting to be retired now, but just because it's a big challenge to get in and out of the observatory. We originally had planned to have a roll-off roof observatory just for the telescopes that we just added, but because the prices of materials had gone up so much, all we could afford was a wheelchair ramp and double doors to take the telescopes out on wheelie carts, at least for now. What else we have? We have the 9 1/4-inch that's still there. We have a solar telescope. We do solar observing once in a while for the guests that stay overnight and for groups that come during the day. We have, what else? Oh, boy. We have another astrophysics refractor, an F11. It's huge. It's like 7 feet long. It's massive.
Holy smokes.
It's also a 6-inch. It's an older telescope. That was early, I think it was late 1980s astrophysics model. And it was a donation. We had a couple of donations, which is great, which, you know, we weren't really expecting. So that was nice. So those are basically the equipment that we have. We also have binoculars for people. So the folks that are staying, we also have a cabin that people can rent. So people that want to stay there, we have a telescope there as well in the cabin so people can take it out. It's just a smaller scope, but if people want to use the larger scopes that are staying overnight, you know, we welcome people to do that too.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the sky cabin right now. That looks amazing. Luxury and astronomy, it's a great thing.
And
Love it.
some people, don't really want to be outside too much, so that we put skylights in the cabin, and some people can, if they want to crash up there in the loft and just kind of look out the skylights. That's kind of why we call it the sky cabin.
And these sky bubbles look amazing too. This looks so cool.
They've been really popular. Like, it's one of those things that, when you first take the cover off of them, people are inside. You take the cover off because the cover on the top stays on during the daytime, because it just gets too hot. I mean, it's like the first time we had them set up for the first year, we didn't have our licenses, so we couldn't actually have people staying in them. So my wife and I set one up, and we basically stayed in it most of the summer, and we had so much fun with it. But one of the first times we had it set up, we had the heater in there, and it was one of those little square infrared heaters, and we didn't even have it plugged in or anything. But the casing was black or brown to make it look like wood. And we had left the cover off, not really thinking about it. And the manual on the tent said clearly, like, put the cover on in the daytime because it's going to get really hot in there. They didn't exactly say how hot it got, but it got hot enough that it cracked the heater in half.
Holy
Wow.
It cracked in half. And it had a big crack in the top when we got back, and it must have hit, I would easily say, 120 Fahrenheit in there. I mean, it's a greenhouse, right? It was hot enough that it actually changed the color of the inside of the tent a little bit. So yeah, we learned our lesson. So, but they're fun. Even we have two of them. We have three of them now. Well, three of them since we started. Two of them have queen size beds in them, and the other one has like the family tent. It has two double beds, so it allows people to really bring their family and stay overnight. And we have outdoor, we have real washrooms. My wife insisted, of course, on, no holes in the ground for toilets. So we actually got a septic system and toilets and a shower and everything, so people can really enjoy their time. It's really glamping, is what it is. It's glamour camping, right? So, and we also have kayak boats. We're next to the river, and campfires and such. We have a dedicated area for have campfires and kayak boats if they want to go kayaking up the river. So it's kind of an all-in-one kind of thing, and people are really enjoying it. And hopefully this year can be a little bit less prone to last year was a little bit rough because we had fires, floods, and fogs most of the summer, but we did okay. And people are coming back, so year after year.
Yeah, that's really good. And I love the idea too of having things to do during the daytime because sometimes the night doesn't cooperate. And, a lot of these places, when you get, under some nice dark skies, you're usually surrounded by nice wilderness too. And it's, often a joy during the daytime as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we've had like a lot of photographers that come and we'll take pictures. I had one guy that stayed at the cabin, and he was a birder, and he wrote like every species of bird he saw in the back of the book of the guest book, and it was amazing. I was like, and he said like, this is an amazing place. He said that he's from the US and didn't realize there's not that many species of birds just in our little area.
And I think Chris and I have the same question on our minds, which is around the Skywatcher 16-inch daub. How do you like that one? How does it perform?
The Skywatcher 16-inch daub is it's not bad. Like, as far as the technology that they've implemented into it is pretty good. I have a little bit of an issue with it right now. I have to take the motor apart before our stargazing session starts because I was finding it was sticking. So I'm not sure what's causing it, but as far as the quality is quite good. The other 16-inch daub that I have is a little bit better because it was the Mead light bridge, and the mirrors were redone by Fulham Optic in Montreal. So the quality on that one is a little bit better as far as visual, but they're very close. Like for most people, they wouldn't really notice a difference between the two.
Very cool. And then I assume you supply eyepieces too if somebody's renting, or do people have to bring their own eyepieces?
No, we have eyepieces and such. So people that want to stay, usually what we do is I set up the equipment, and once the general stargazing is finished, if there's somebody that wants to use it, use the telescopes, they're welcome to them. We've got a number of different eyepieces, everything from Pentax to the Naglers. So, they can expect, good quality.
Yeah, that sounds great. My wife and I are loosely planning a trip to the East Coast. I may have to add a stop here to the itinerary. Not sure she'll be super happy, but we'll try to make it happen.
Oh, I'm sending you the link to the Trout Lodge. It's a pretty posh looking place, I think, more than what I had recalled when I was thinking of it.
Yeah, they've got new owners now. So it's a little bit different.
Oh, yeah, it looks different.
They don't have a whole lot as far as like equipment right now. They have a stargazing sort of platform. I've been there and stayed overnight. I actually train their astronomers there, so they come for me for training. But it's a beautiful spot. I think for me, the outdoor hot tub did it.
Yeah, I'm just that's on the cover shot that I sent Shane there just now.
Yes.
Might not be such a hard sell, Shane.
Yeah, I'm seeing that now.
It's a bit higher priced,
Wow.
but yeah, it's a fun place.
Yeah, that's gorgeous.
And it's not that far from Digby, which pretty much has some of the best scallops on the face of the planet. So
Ooh,
that's right.
I like that too.
If you like scallops and you like dark skies, then
This
this
is
is the
it.
area of the world to go to.
That's right. Yep.
How are mosquitoes and bugs at night?
There's none, right?
There's none in the sky bubble.
Okay. To be expected, yeah.
Typically though, the mosquito, like typically it does get cooler there in that region at night though, I think, Tim. So typically they do settle down after about the first 40 or so minutes.
Usually they do, but this last summer was one of those things are getting warmer, the climates are changing. We've here we are in March, and we're starting to see flies flying around,
Wow.
which normally is not till May. So yeah, I'm expecting the black flies are going to be chewing us up by April. And mosquitoes out by June, July. But yeah, at nighttime normally it does cool off. But we tell Brit people to bring their bug spray and stuff anyway.
You must get a lot of the peepers down there, which those are not a fly for anybody who's not familiar, but you must get lots of Nova Scotia peepers there, right? Like the little frogs.
Oh yes, we're surrounded by marsh here.
Yeah.
So at my house here we have to shut the windows some nights. It's so loud. You can't sleep.
So,
But
have you ever heard these, Shane?
no.
This is worth like that's one of the biggest things that I miss about not observing in Nova Scotia is that in the springtime you get these little baby frogs and they're called a peeper and they have like this I'm not going to do it but it's like peep 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 and it's like very very high pitched and you typically want them to be like 100 or 200 meters away because it's pretty loud But it's just like one of those quintessential, you know, it's spring. Like typically the evenings aren't going to be going below zero. It just like is like that summer trigger. I don't know what it means for you, Tim, but to me, that's what it signals, that summer is here. It's, you're not going to be freezing tonight, right?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Something else that's returned in the last couple of years, is fireflies.
Oh yeah.
Last summer was insane. Like they were everywhere. As soon as there was a damp evening, on the marsh, there was millions of them. And we were like, wow, this is, you know, this is amazing that they're back, because we hadn't seen them really for a few years. So, and the other thing that's returned too, I think, is bats. At least at our place, we saw a few. The turtles, we had a lot of turtles when we first built the observatory. The turtles would come up and lay their eggs, and small turtles and snapping turtles too. I had to warn the guests, like some of them would be like, oh, let's get a picture with it. I'm like, no, don't go close to the turtle.
Exactly.
It will snap your finger off. But we had a little bit of conundrum happen, where we had a neighbor put up a street light. And we think that's part of the problem with the turtles, where they haven't come back, because the light's shining into the marsh. So we think it's confusing them.
That'll do it.
Yeah. So trying to prove it's one thing, but you know, it's one of those things. But luckily, our area here now is, they're working on a light pollution bylaw. So we've already got bylaws as part of our land use bylaw. So any new construction here that happens in the municipality of Argyle, has to conform to dark sky friendly lighting, essentially. And they're working on a separate bylaw that's supposed to be released this year. The draft is out now. Apparently we'll be the first municipality on a municipal level to have a bylaw for light pollution in Canada.
Wow.
That's pretty exciting. We've been working at it for quite some time. So we created a society around the Starlight initiative, called the Starlight Development Society. And it's essentially, you know, we are trying to promote, you know, astrotourism in our region, you know, partnering with different businesses too, but mostly with like Nova Scotia Power, Efficiency Nova Scotia, and Nova Scotia Tourism. We're working with the schools to promote it, astronomy education, that sort of thing. So it's kind of like my grand vision has always been to have, you know, astrotourism in Nova Scotia, you know, as something that is not just, you know, a side thing, but for people to really kind of take on astronomy in a different light. You know, astronomy, astrotourism, you know, teaching astronomy and the importance of, you know, protecting the night sky and the environment, you know, in the schools. So it's more than just like a business for me. Regardless if I had a business or if I decide to shut it down at some point, I would still advocate for, you know, protection of the night skies, because, you know, I think we as, you know, humans have really started to disconnect from nature, which is, you know, our skies as well. You know, we all know, listening to the podcast here, you know, you've heard this whole concept of, you know, we are stardust. Well, we are stardust. So, you know, we are connected, and that really, if we start to really lose that connection, you know, with our universe and where we come from, you know, we lose that connection between each other as well. And it really makes a big difference when you start to reconnect with the universe, especially when you have those like-minded people that have, you know, connected with the universe on the same level. You share something in common, and it's just a wonderful thing.
Tim, you referenced briefly the I think Nova Scotia Starlight initiative, or counting stars. Can you talk to us a little bit about the Counting Stars citizen science project that you're involved with?
Yeah, we so as part of this, we wanted to try to get something, have a project that would kind of engage students a little bit and their families, and make them aware of the importance of, you know, our night skies. So we found on the web, and I don't remember who the original inventor is of the project, but it was a Counting Stars project. And essentially it's to identify the areas in the region, you know, in your sky that, or in your area that have, you know, problems with light pollution. And by getting the different municipalities involved to have these students, the idea would be for the students or the family to create like a little picture frame made out of cardboard with the proper dimensions, and basically go out on a clear, dark night and attach the little picture frame with the proper length string to your shoulder so that you can go outside, pick five different spots in the night sky and see how many stars you can count. So you would take an average of those, you know, five different sections. So if you found, you know, five different spots in the sky, you've got 100 here, you got 100 here, and 200 over here. You take an average of that, and it kind of gives you a general ballpark as to how many stars that's in your night sky. So, and also the other thing, we kind of added to it a little bit and wanted to know how many light bulbs can you see, you know, that are on in your area. So if it's, you know, street light or whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically we get people to log their results on our website, NovaScotiaStarlight.com. And that would give us sort of a gauge as to where the most, you know, problematic places, you know, that are having, you know, issues with light pollution, and we can help, you know, fix them. The project started back in September of last year, and we're wrapping it up at the end of March. We've had probably, I think, about 30 to 50 participants, something like that. I haven't counted recently. So the students, we've had students come to the observatory. I've gone to classrooms and talked about, you know, the whole thing, the whole project. And we've had some good participants. And at the end of the project, we'll draw for some prizes. We have a telescope there, a Celestron. Can't remember. I think it was the 130 inch. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Mm.
I think I'd have more than a few people start to do that. but anyways, it's one of the StarSense Explorer telescopes, and we'll have binoculars, books, you know, visit to Deep Sky Eye, that kind of thing. So we'll have prizes for the kids and the families. So yeah, that's the little project that we're working on, and it's a good little project to involve the community and kind of make people more aware of the importance of our region, and that, yeah, you know, we've been selected as, you know, we've as one of the, you know, dark sky places of the world. So,
and for those who aren't aware, this is if you can think of sort of the very eastern side of Canada, and this is on the Nova Scotia area, but Yarmouth is on the sort of the far western side of Nova Scotia, sort of what we would call the south shore-ish, I guess is the best way to put it. But Yarmouth is one of the most beautiful, you know, little communities to go and stay. I think there's like lots of other places to stay there, lots of nice little restaurants and stuff like that. If it's still the same as it was when I was last there a dozen or so years ago.
Yeah, you can also visit the Yarmouth and Acadian Shores website. And there's lots of stuff they have on their website with the places to stay, things to do. And it's been also, I think Yarmouth just recently won, this last year, the year before, one of the, like something like one of the top 10 small towns of the world or something like that. It was places to visit. So it was pretty cool.
What's the latitude there, Tim?
What are we at? 43?
Yeah, just over 43, I think. So it's
Wow.
basically kind of like about like the Niagara Peninsula there in Ontario. So it's one of the furthest south places you can get in Canada. Basically south of Toronto, basically is what it would be, which that's all lake if you've ever been to Toronto.
It's the other thing too about it is it's we're in this like tropical bubble, they call it. So we don't get like as much snow as the rest of Nova Scotia. We tend to have warmer weather. And the interesting thing about where we are, particularly in Quinnen, is we're like half an hour inland. So it's interesting because people will get off the ferry in Yarmouth, for example, or get off the ferry boat in Yarmouth and give me a call, and they're like, "Is our stargazing on tonight? Because like we can't see a thing." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, no, we're good here." So the fog generally stays away for us, usually till about 4 o'clock in the morning, during the August months, August, July, August. So, we're usually pretty good. We are around a lot of water, but the observatory itself is about 100 feet above the water. So we tend, we get mist along the river and stuff, but yeah, usually stays away for most of the night.
Tim, you referred to the ferry. Maybe we should let people know, especially those along like the eastern seaboard of the US. You can take a ferry there from, is it coming from Portland still, or where does it come from?
I think it's Bar Harbor.
Bar Harbor. Okay.
They had it sort of mixed at one point, but I think it's going to be, I'm not sure what it is going to be this year yet. I think it's still Bar Harbor. It could be wrong, could be Portland, but you can check it out on the Bay Ferries website. But yeah, it leaves. And one kind of a little bit of a warning, if you're coming from the US and you do take the ferry, we generally tell people to, especially when it becomes roughly like August timeframe, so August, September. We tell people not to book the stargazing experience, like the deep sky eye experience, until the next day. You don't want to book it the same day you arrive, because there is usually delays at the customs. Sometimes you might not, and there's an hour difference. We're in the Atlantic time zone, so there's an hour difference from Eastern time. That caught a lot of people off guard, and they will arrive too late to do the experience. So stay a couple of days.
Yes. Yeah. People should stay a couple of days anyway. This isn't like an overnight kind of trip. I think no matter how you cut it, it's well worth your while to hang around for, I think, a few days in the area. You got to go in and see Yarmouth. You got to do your night sky experience. You got to go over to Digby and get some scallops. So
You got to climb the lighthouse.
there you go. There's our plug for Nova Scotia tourism, something that means a lot to me. Cool. All right. What else do we want to chat about, Tim? We got a few minutes left here. If you have anything that we missed that we should cover.
Well, I guess the only other thing is we have in the works, probably won't be this year for sure, but something that we're working on is, as part of the Deep Sky Eye experience, is a planetarium.
Oh.
So we're planning a 50-person planetarium that will be able to do shows and such during the times where it's cloudy out and people still want something to do. So it's something that we're looking for in the summer months, kind of excited, trying to figure out, the details, but something to look forward to in the future.
Wow, is that one of those inflatable ones or permanent structure? What are you thinking?
It'll be a permanent structure.
Huh.
Yeah, we're
Wow.
looking at something that's more permanent. It would only be running during the spring, summer, fall kind of months, but yeah, we're looking at options and what's the most effective that we can do. And we've still got a bit of land across the observatory area there, so figure out all the logistics and whatnot.
Cool. Very cool. Do you have anything that you want to add, Shane, that we may have missed?
No, but thanks, Tim. This is pretty cool awareness of a great destination that I wasn't aware of. And I wish there was more astronomy destinations like this where you could go and not have to worry about bringing all of your gear and have, nice accommodations and great skies to observe under. So I really appreciate you doing this. And like I say, I will see if I can add this to my itinerary for my upcoming trip out there.
I hope you can, Shane. It would be wonderful to meet you and have you visit our beautiful area.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Tim. We appreciate having you on. It's nice to reconnect with you. It really is.
Yeah, you as well. And hopefully we'll get a chance to meet again here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. For the subscribers and listeners, share the show with other stargazers you know. Send us your show ideas, observations, and questions to actualastronomy@gmail.com. And we'll try to put the notes for this podcast and all the different things we referred to in a link section there. So you can go check those out.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. If you are interested in more information, would like to contact us, or if you would like to support the podcast, check out our website, actualastronomy.com.